Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called The Footsteps of My Father Walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey tennis?
With a stupid Ewok head.
Blah blah on him, Nolsey.
Love you, Aim.
Monkey tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey tennis?
Motherfucker.
Gary Wilmot. Okay. Sue Cook. Okay. Dale Winton. Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Hello, and welcome once again to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're tackling the output of Alan Gordon Partridge one week at a time. Right now, we are midway through Nomad, his travelogue story in the footsteps of his father. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
A special kind of pillock.
Nick Alder.
I'm Rick Wakeman, and my glass is dry.
And Tom Stab.
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Outrageous.
Yes.
But what's your quote?
Yeah. You managed to both insult Nick there. Tom basically said a special kind of pillock, and then I said Nick Alder.
So hurtful.
Speaking of who.
Just don't let them speak to me like that.
Nick's currently at the wheel in terms of who's steering this the next few chapters in Nomad.
Okay, yeah, fine. I see. A metaphor all over the place. Very good. I see what you're implying. Yeah. I'm a bad driver.
A drunk driver.
Chapter 13, Digs in Dis. Where is Alan? What's he doing? Tom Dark, do I need to throw to you for an update on the walk?
No, I told you just 2 minutes ago we don't need to do this until chapter 15.
Okie doke. Not a problem. We're going to move on. This is going well so far, guys. So where is Alan? Where's he up to? What's he doing? So he's in Dis. He's at a B&B, or as my notes now say, as I've read here, a B&D. Not sure what that meant, but either way, he is on a Denmark Hill.
Tits to all that.
In Dis. Probably didn't need to flag that, but I have.
I like the nod to accuracy here. Where he says,
no, I said B&D, not B&B. That's not accurate.
No. I've moved on.
You've gone to the book. Sorry, yeah. Sorry. Please.
You remember the book.
you've read it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He says, I knock at the door with a rat-a-tat-tat. Actually, just a rat-a-tat, thinking about it. He cannot let it go. What if the record ended up showing it was a rat-a-tat-tat when it was just a rat-a-tat?
And also, it all adds to the word count.
Yeah, it does, yeah, crucially.
So we kind of get a lengthy story here with Alan essentially saying that the B&B industry used to be the envy of the world, but what's essentially happened is that he's knocked on the wrong door, essentially, despite slating the industry. It's actually his error, which is a pretty common theme with Alan, just generally speaking.
Yeah, doesn't he call them the nervous Nellies who run today's guest houses and only speak from behind locked doors? But that's obviously because he's actually not at a guest house.
Yeah, yeah, he's basically just at someone's house.
He also says that they tend to lob in chippy responses to perfectly constructive TripAdvisor criticism, which is something that comes up more and more now. There's increasingly restaurants and hotels will bite back at fake or bad TripAdvisor reviews.
And I do love that the TripAdvisor trope in this book is very strong, really, and consistent, good. And it's always always quite amusing.
Yeah, definitely.
Herder Gerder, the Bradford and Bingley herm from Nurner.
I mutter quietly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just worth, before we get to the B&B, the fact that he is at the wrong address, and he says, I've come to check in and delighted you finally opened the door. I say, striding past her and into a lounge where three men are watching football. Next door, she says. I quickly leave. Although this was a private residence, I stand by everything I wrote above.
Yeah. So he's finally made it to the B&B, which is owned by a Mrs. Lancashire. I mean, the joke here is essentially that she loves a celebrity, right, but doesn't recognise Alan. That's the big joke.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, that he seems to expect somebody running a B&B to be either buxom or saucy. Those are prerequisites for him. He says, although neither buxom nor saucy, Mrs. Lancashire is at least socially functioning.
Yeah, he essentially thinks anyone who runs a B&B should be from like the 1960s and probably in a Carry On film.
Yeah. And he kind of discovers Mrs. Lancashire's Hall of Fame, although it transpires that her name is Hetty, although what's kind of apparent is it's Hetty for celebrities and Mrs. Lancashire for just the general public, which is why Alan is essentially having to address her as Mrs. Lancashire, which he's not happy about. Has anyone got a note of the various faces that adorn the Wall of Fame?
Well, we can go through them.
Please do.
Charlie Dimmock giving a thumbs up.
Yep. Any more?
Kelvin McKenzie, who's written Lovely B&B, and that's the truth.
Who's Kelvin McKenzie?
Well, I don't know.
That's,
I don't know who that is.
That's a good reference.
Yeah,
there's
that is a good reference.
Go on, Nick. Dive into this.
He's like the editor of The Sun, isn't he?
He was the editor of The Sun at the time of Hillsborough.
Yeah, and also he turned up on... I was going to say he's on the Madeline. Is he on the Madeline McCann documentary that Netflix put out?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Wouldn't speculate.
Yeah, okay.
So is the thing about that's the truth? Is that a bit of a Sun-based?
Yeah, that's
gag?
Basically right, a very right, sly right. gag at the headline that he put. I believe he allegedly put in the Sun that says the truth, and it was effectively blaming the fans of Middlesbrough. Yeah.
Any other huge names?
Everest Windows, Craig Doyle.
Has anyone checked if Everest Windows does have a Craig Doyle?
No,
is he indeed the star of Everest Windows?
I mean, Nick's running this chapter.
Oh, yeah. So, Craig, are you familiar with the Everest Windows adverts?
No.
Okay, so Everest Windows, I mean, it's essentially an advertiser that you'd see during the daytime on an ITV. And Craig Doyle was basically the face of it. But he's like an ex-BBC presenter.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he turned just to become the face of Everest Windows. So, that is the joke there.
And also, that's with his lovely wife, Dune.
Yeah, I mean, I can't comment on his wife.
Presumably, that's a nod to Dune, whose surname we still can't pronounce after 75
well,
episodes.
Unless if that's his genuine wife.
Partridge. Yeah.
Gloria Hunniford with a glass of wine.
Duncan Goodhue.
Brackets keep swimming.
The Kinnocks.
Awful.
And then we have a post-pop podcast crossover, as listed as one of the faces on the wall, Claire Grogan, who, of course, played Kachansky in Red Dwarf.
And I would argue there's maybe a bit of a link with Shona McGough, that performance in Know Me Knowing You, a bit of the kind of like punky Scotch band.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a bit of a Claire Grogan-ish?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in the same ballpark, just to clarify, the post-pop crossover there is Smeghead's producer Jed's Red Dwarf podcast, in which Kachansky obviously appears.
Available on all good and bad podcast outlets.
One of my favourite ones on this is Paul Gambaccini. He's left the comment, thanks for everything and sorry. What's Gambaccini done?
He's soiled the sheets, hasn't he?
So there's a footnote where Alan says, of course, I'll never know what the DJ and music historian had done wrong. Perhaps he soiled his sheets, snored loudly, made a pass at her. Maybe he got FedEx to deliver a small bag to him. Gambo, if you're still reading, get in touch, let us know.
Interestingly, that's not in the audiobook.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that footnote.
Yeah, not all the footnotes are in the audiobook, are they? I think the ones where it makes relevant sense to say it straight after the line.
I think it from listening and reading along to make notes on other people's sections, there are bits where I'm like, oh, he hasn't included the footnote because he hasn't said it immediately after the point. He'll wait to the end of the paragraph and then do the footnote.
Oh, so they've made a case by case judgment.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
So to continue the list, a cranky, doesn't specify which one, which is a lot of fun, and Jarvis Cocker, which I thought was actually quite contemporary compared to the rest of them.
Yeah. But before we get to the crux of this celebrity wall, I think there are a couple of other highlights of this chapter, because I think we want to save that reveal till last. I quite enjoyed the fact that essentially Alan has a bit of a nose around her bedroom, because I think, does he say he walked in there by accident? So has a bit of a nose around. 10 minutes later, I realised Mrs. Lancashire is not fascinating. She used to work for the council and now she doesn't. Brackets, cool story, bro. He also essentially forces her to wash his feet. She eventually agrees to draw me a foot bath using the washing up bowl that some people have in the kitchen sinks as a kind of plastic inner sink. And he says his feet relax and bleed a little into the warm water, which I thought was quite disgusting.
Yeah, he does make quite a big thing about his feet injuries.
And well, if, I mean, it's only going to get worse from exactly, here. Yeah. And before he got to the celebrity wall as well, he says, this is this, after all, an area untouched by the world of entertainment and celebrity, although arguably quite a lot of celebrities have been through. Right, Nick, do you want to give us the big reveal from the celeb wall?
Tee it up.
Well, there, looking back at him, is the face of Edmonds.
Like a punch in the gut and a kick in the cock.
So that takes us to the next chapter. Anyone know what it's called? I'm joking. It's called Edmonds. So at this point, we should only refer to him as Edmonds. Okay?
Edmonds.
Okay. It's only to be referred to as Edmonds. It, he.
It.
It.
Is it? It is he.
It is only to be referred as, to as Edmonds. So I was going to say, first off, I think that this chapter is definitely one of the best ones in the book.
Yep, I'd agree.
Good opportunity for a deeper insight into Alan's relationship with Edmonds. And definitely put some flesh on the bones of this. There's definitely stuff that often you'll hear kind of either jokes or stories that you know slightly sort of built out. But this feels like new territory. So we're finding out new information about Edmonds, which I very much enjoyed.
I'd say as well, before we do a deep dive into this chapter, I think this entire chapter was published in The Guardian as kind of nomad pre-release hype, wasn't it?
So don't know.
I think you, or at least a large portion of this
certainly
chapter.
Certainly there's been a long form piece of text in The Guardian supposedly written by Alan in reference to Edmonds.
I'm pretty sure it was taken from chapter, but probably just not the whole thing, because obviously it's probably too long to publish in a paper. But yeah.
So the reason why I mentioned at the beginning about only referring to him as Edmonds is because he signs off all emails and legal letters as Edmonds, which I very much enjoyed. And also, Alan is very clear at this point. He doesn't hate Edmonds. He just wants to make that very clear.
It makes him laugh, doesn't it?
It really does. There are things that he does hate. Does anyone want to cover them off?
Yes, the things he does, the way he behaves, his personality, and his appearance.
But not Edmonds.
No, crucially, because he wouldn't want to give him the satisfaction.
Which is code for he absolutely hates it.
And I think the other crucial point is, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, it's the opposite, isn't it?
So Alan first met him at an Our Price radio event, and similar to the Gary Wilmot fluffing of the mushroom joke, there is a similar gag here where Alan suggests that he is the first Noel or Noel because he's first to arrive. But Alan, when he tries to explain it, I don't know if Edmonds doesn't get it or
this is
going to
be my question.
Trying to sort of, you know,
undermine him.
Undermine him and or what?
I don't like, how have you not heard of the first Noel as like a song?
Yeah.
So and I think he's just trying to belittle Alan.
It feels a bit like Alan has bumped up against someone whose pedantry is equal to his.
Good point. Yeah.
And he can dish it out, but he can't take it. You know. So Edmonds here is saying, well, you're saying Noel, my name's Noel. I mean, that's the sort of pedantry you'd expect if someone tried to crack this joke to Alan.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's kind of the point, isn't it? It's like they're at the starting point where they're both vying to make it as broadcasters, and they're probably both at equal levels of bellendry, essentially.
In the real world here, is the real cuss that basically Edmonds and Partridge are very similar?
Yeah.
Except that Partridge is fictitious and Edmonds has to live in real life.
Well, I also think
has to live in real life as Edmonds.
Yeah. I think that this is obviously a sign of, once again, him being the kind of a narrator that's sort of bending the truth, shall we say.
What I really like about this as well, you have the way that Alan frames this as some kind of positive affirmation, saying in many ways this was his first gotcha, a successful TV and radio star humiliating an impressionable young DJ for sport. And obviously the killer line, it takes a special kind of pillock to do that.
So correct me if I'm wrong, and I guess if you guys can't remember, then I'm sure I'll open it out to our listeners if they want to do it. I'm pretty sure that this kind of beef with Edmonds, this rivalry with Edmonds, is a Gibbons creation. I don't think there was any pre-Gibbons mention of Edmonds or even Eamon Holmes in sort of I'm Alan Partridge, Know Me, Knowing You. Not that I can remember anyway, but this kind of intense rivalry, or actually really one-sided hatred towards Edmonds, it doesn't really come the other way in any way, shape or form, I think is a Gibbons creation.
Yeah, because I think there's definitely conversation in
I Partridge
and Mid-Morning Matters about the thing where it's Dale Winton, Edmonds, and I can't remember who else going to the Earls Court boat show, stuff like that. So it's almost like this thing where they were kind of friends and in the same circles, but there is also this intense rivalry.
I wouldn't be surprised if when they started with Know Me, Knowing You and things like that, it naturally, by reviewers and things, got compared as a spoof of Edmonds.
Yeah,
and yeah, then, more contemporary at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then I imagine that people like Edmonds and that kind of people were then asked what they thought about it, and so then it became kind of natural. They'd interacted with the APU to bring them into it as characters.
They would have been coming up in the TV circles around the sort of similar time, wouldn't they? So it wouldn't have made sense to do it at the time, but now retrospectively they can refer to back to the past when they probably would have been in the set, like you say, in the same circles. But if there is a mention that we can't remember, please do let us know.
I think the earliest mention you get is him talking about Noel's house party in Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Right.
But again, that's when he just says, have you seen Noel's house party? That's the kind of show this is, Keep It Light. So yeah, like we were kind of saying, at that earlier point in the APU, it's just this thing where it's Edmonds is a benchmark of successful TV.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We then get a few stories that help back up why Alan doesn't like Edmonds. So the first one is an event where Edmonds basically gets Carol drunk after Alan saying that was explicitly off limits. And essentially, Carol is sick on a bathroom mat, and guess who has to clean it up? You guessed it. It's Muggins.
Massive dick move from Edmonds there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, is it though? So allow me to continue. Further incidents include a sheepdog display, which Alan is commentating on. And then Edmonds appears in his, and I love this word, Nolicopter. And as he kind of descends, he spooks the ducks who, you know, jump off the ramp and, you know, despite the fact that Alan is saying, climb, climb, Edmonds again just sort of lands as he would do, and then walks off into the guest area with the singer of Tapao again.
both of them laughing their heads off?
Both of them laughing their heads off. That's crucial. And then finally, Edmonds drives into a car park and sprays shale everywhere, but luckily doesn't hit Alan's car. Now, for me, I wonder if, when you kind of review the facts, is it just that Carol went to an event and got drunk, Edmonds turned up at an event in a helicopter, and then he also then just parked a car? Have these essentially been built out to be things that didn't really happen, as Alan might have suggested?
Yeah, they're certainly not aimed at Alan, are they? No. He's taken them as a...
Well, I think the thing about Carol with the wine, there is a giveaway in this, the way it's written. So Alan says, I think she's had quite enough, Noel. And then he writes, he'd nod as if to say, right you are, Alan. And that's the kind of thing, like, as if to say, yes, of course, that kind of literary device that we see a lot in this book. So Edmonds probably isn't even in conversation with him or engaging with him. So it doesn't mean that he's ignoring him.
And even
it's
if he
just
is,
not part of it.
It seems like all he's really done is sided with Carol over Alan. Carol thinks she'd like another glass. Alan thinks she shouldn't.
Yeah.
Noel's decided she can make her own choices.
And it's very much like, I'll decide when you've had enough, which is kind of that, like, you know, 90s male kind of chauvinistic, you can't have another glass of wine.
Also, sorry, that first grievance is at a 1991 Radio Times bash to celebrate the deregulation of TV listings. I did try and work out if this event had ever actually taken place. TV listings were deregulated in 1991. That is an incredible bit of research.
So
as far as I can tell, there was no party thrown.
Is that about different magazines could only have BBC and ITV type stuff?
Back in the day, cast your minds back, older members of the Monkey Tennis crew, you would buy Radio Times and it would only cover the BBC.
Right.
Yeah. Because the listings were the property of the channel that ran the programmes, as far as I can tell.
I'm a big fan of the section that details the nadir in the relationship. Where it says it came in a small room at the BBC. This was 1994, and as presenters of live shows, him, the critically mauled Noel's House Party, me, the critically reviewed and with Alan Partridge.
But I think there's a bit more to say about that. But just before we do that, there is one other altercation, which is worth a mention of another occasion. He found where I was holding my 50th birthday bash and, to sully the ambiance, booked an all-male strip troupe, which turns out it was Hot Pants. Now, I have a theory about that. Did Alan actually book them and just blames it on Edmonds?
Well, this is kind of what I was going to say, because of those kind of four stories, if you will, assuming the last one is true, that's the only one where you could have a genuine grievance, because he's actually done something.
He's actively
explicitly.
Booked,
yeah. He's explicitly done it. Whereas, to that point, my comment was, has he done it? Although the thing that makes me think, is the theme was Louis XIV, a brilliant theme. I can only imagine what that would have looked like. And obviously, Hot Pants are dressed as American cops. So I don't know if that quite works.
I don't think Alan booked them, because the footnote says doubly insulting was the fact that he tracked down and hired Hot Pants, the very dance troupe I'd erroneously invited onto my television chat show. So
yeah, but I'm going with the unreliable narrator homoerotic angle here.
I don't know.
Oh,
I just
no,
think
someone's booked these hot sexy men by mistake.
I see.
Stop dancing around me.
Oh,
stop
no,
dancing
don't
around me.
Yeah.
Possible, get off my possible massive throne, okay, yeah, etc.
Massive what?
Massive throne.
Okay, good.
We then hotfoot it to a BBC training event where, as young presenters, they are made to go on a safety tutorial by the BBC. So participating in this is obviously Partridge, Edmonds and Nick Ross. I mean, again, just as a scene in and of itself, just them being in a room watching, you know, a health and safety tutorial on safety is genuinely brilliant.
And also acting like school children, bickering like kids, basically.
Although I would, this is kind of the, I mean, this is the whole essence of Partridge, really, is I would love to know what their side of the story is. So if you spoke to Nick Ross or to indeed Edmonds, like, what is their memory of that? What would they say actually happened? But obviously this pays off with the fact that Alan is fronting the video tutorial that's being shown to the group, which obviously Edmonds finds hugely amusing. Does anyone have a list of the videos that Alan has fronted? Anyone want to kick us off?
Sure. It starts off with Be the Best Fire Warden.
How Leaders Lead and How Losers Lose.
We've got Identifying the Cancer That Is Low Workforce Morale.
I'm so glad I got this one. Tell Me About Debenhams.
There is one more as well.
THINK, which is the one they're currently watching.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk you through what THINK stands for? T, think about the dangers. H, how should I approach them? I, I'm the one responsible. N, no excuses. K, know what you're doing.
That's such a mishmash of sentence types.
Terrible.
Just to make the acronym grateful work, isn't it? I love it.
So much as we heard earlier in the chapter where he was referenced as a pillock, Edmonds is also now referred to as a wazzock of a guy. Pillock and wazzock, definitely words that I think are cruelly underused in 2019. So I'm glad to see that they get a bit of a reference. But does Alan hate him? No. Hopefully that's been made clear by this chapter, that there's absolutely no animosity between them, despite everything that's been said thus far.
He cannot stand him, but he doesn't hate him.
No. Any other nuggets from this Edmonds chapter that anyone want to call out before we move on?
Yes, I've got a couple. I love the phrase talking about Edmonds with his stupid Ewok head. Anyone else got any more?
Yes, I like that he talks in a footnote about amending marketing material when he was at Saxon Radio in Bury St. Edmunds. I did the research on Saxon Radio, and that was a real radio station in Bury St. Edmunds at potentially around the time that Alan could have been working there. Some changes he made were changing latest chart music to freshest pop sounds and the best of our output to the cream of our discharge.
So Alan is done lambasting Edmunds, and I particularly like the point that he goes on to make when doing his TripAdvisor review for the B&B, where he says, using a hotel's own wireless internet to slam it on TripAdvisor is such a sweet thrill, it damn near gives me a boner. And today is no exception. Although with the bulk of my body's blood burying itself in the lower legs to help them recuperate, there isn't enough in the loins to bone me up as well.
I feel like he's letting some Americanism slip in, even though he hates American things. Like, I feel like the Partridge of old would have said stiffy. Just throwing it out there. Boner is too far down the American scale for Alan. Yeah.
Perhaps a poll. Would Alan say boner or stiffy? Or stiffy?
Keen to run a poll.
Please do add an option that is other. Please specify.
Yeah. Right. I thought it might be a good opportunity at this point, bearing in mind Edmonds is, I assume, a friend of the show. Can't stress that enough. I'm sure he's a friend of the show.
I've had contact with him in the past.
We need to, well remembered, Adam. So, round the group. Has anyone actually had any dealings with Noel in their personal life? Tom Stab?
Have not.
Tom Dark?
No, can't say I have, sadly.
I certainly haven't. Adam?
Yes, I have to. I mean, we've been through this before.
Let's go through it again.
Let's not labour the point, but
unnecessary detail.
For any new listeners, I was briefly a child contestant on Noel's House Party. I mean, not to brag, but around the time it was at its 18, 19 million viewer peak.
Huge.
Just saying. As big as EastEnders, just saying.
Where can we see that clip?
You can see it never and nowhere unless you bribe me enough to get the DVD out of some sort of locked
So what you're
basement.
Saying is we need to crowdfund this.
Or just drop Adam's mum a text message and say, please, can you send us a link to that?
can we get the clarity? You were on, what was it? Wait till I get you home.
Wait till I get you home. We didn't get any of the good prizes. We got a cow butter dish and an ice cream machine that's only been used once.
Perfect prizes for a child.
What I can stress is that I got a dubiously signed photo of Mr. Blobby where his paw print was far smaller than even an 11-year-old would know that the paw was. This is obviously back when there was a functioning theme park, which is now defunct and overgrown. Some great pictures of that online.
Genuinely terrifying.
Yep. They filmed all the segments in one big batch. They did all the Wait Till I Get You Homes at once. My parents got off lightly. The guy after me had found a sex tape of his mum and dad underneath their bed.
No.
Talked about that on BBC One.
Jesus.
Yeah, brilliant. Please do lock up your sex tapes, parents. Yeah.
And the good news is I do have a couple of screen grabs of Adam's appearance on that show, so we can definitely share those on the socials if you haven't seen them before.
Okay, before we move on, I thought we might do a quick Edmonds quiz.
Yes.
How do we feel about an Edmonds quiz? I will essentially read a piece of trivia, and it's up to you as a group to suggest or to say even whether it's true or false.
I've certainly done enough research to give me some confidence.
Okay.
I know your enemy.
I haven't done very much research on Edmonds at all. Yeah.
It's big talk from Adam.
Are we answering as a group or is it individual here?
Group.
Yeah,
group,
as a group. We need a group.
All right.
Consensus.
So, true or false, Edmund's middle name is Ernest?
My gut says false. I have no intel.
My gut says true.
Adam for the decider.
I'm going to say false.
False. Okay, we have a consensus that it is false.
It is true. So no points there. No points. True or false, Edmund's is currently aged 75.
I think true.
I think he's not that old. I think he's in his 60s.
I've got a feeling that I saw his age recently and it was higher than I expected given the quality and thickness of his hair.
I don't cover it in anywhere here. What hair? What hair?
What?
What hair?
Stupidly, what head?
I would say it's true.
Consensus is true.
Fine.
It's false. He's 70. He was born on the 22nd of December, 1948.
That's still older than I thought, than you think.
That's the hair of a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
Maybe he bought it from them.
Yeah. True or false? Edmonds has worked on a show which involved the death of a show participant.
That is true.
I think that's true.
He's absolutely Forbes McAllistered it.
Happy to go with the consensus?
It is true. Mm. The Late Late Breakfast Show is a program.
Ironic title.
Yeah, which is remembered. It's remembered for several accidents during its regular Give It a Whirl stunt slot. In particular, the death of Michael Lush. The show was cancelled by the BBC on the 15th of November 1986, following the death of Lush 2 days earlier. While rehearsing a bungee jump to be performed live on the show, Michael Lush plunged 120 feet or 37 metres to his death when his rope came loose. Noel Edmonds quit the show immediately afterwards.
But was still employed by the BBC afterwards.
Well, yeah, so there's hope for Jeremy Kyle is what we're learning here. Yeah.
True or false, Edmonds has an estimated wealth of £75 million.
False.
No,
fuck off.
Not anymore. I'm sure in his heyday he did.
No, I don't think he'd be that high.
Well, he got scammed by Lloyd's Bank, allegedly, and there's been an ongoing court
case. And there are
so
several radio stations.
I certainly don't think he's got £75 million now.
Yeah, false. False.
That is true.
What?
No.
According to the internet, that is true.
Oh, according to the internet, here we go.
Okay, true or false? Edmonds is the president, or should I say was the president, I've partially given it away, to the British Horse Society.
True.
True.
It is true. Yeah. In June 2006...
I like that you think you've only partially given it away.
June 2006, the then president of the British Horse Society severely criticised... He basically criticised it and, again, was basically ousted from it months later.
That's a very Partridge move, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
True or false? Edmunds invested £5 million into the Crinkly Bottom / Mr Blobby theme park.
True.
Yeah,
I'm going true.
Yes. Yeah. I have no intel to suggest that that is true, so we're saying false.
Oh, okay.
Anyone want some quick updates on the theme parks?
Oh, yeah. Go. Yeah.
So, Mr Blobby appeared at three Crinkly Bottom theme park attractions.
There were three. Unbelievable. Yeah.
The first was based at Cricket St Thomas in Somerset, opening in July 1994.
That was the main one.
Yeah. And attracted over 500,000 visitors in its first year. After that, attendances dwindled and the park closed in 1998.
Is that because people were out drinking and...
It was still open for 4 years.
Indeed.
Wow.
The second park was opened at Happy Mount Park, Morecambe in 1994. This led to large losses, a large scandal topping councillors and an auditor's investigation.
Jesus.
Where essentially the council was deemed to have been completely reckless and have grossly misused taxpayers' funds. And then finally, a third park was based in Pleasurewood Hills, Lowestoft. It also failed to outlive the 1990s, but maintained successful revenue during and after the Crinkly Bottom branding. So it was essentially rebadged and then became successful.
I feel like the lesson there is that if you're building an expensive theme park, it's only going to be a success for as long as you have a primetime TV show to go along with it.
That
seems to be the lesson here.
True or false, there was a charity event that caused the death of a child.
That's quite dark.
Yeah, also you haven't related it to Noel Evans.
A charity event
within which Noel was at has caused the death of a child. True or false?
I'm just going to say false because I want it to be false.
Yeah. False.
It would be reckless and gross to have included it if it was true.
It is true. there was a helicopter crash that killed a 9-year-old The Nolicopter.
Climate and fly!
Yeah. So a 9-year-old boy, unfortunately, did die.
At least you've been able to eke some light entertainment out of it now, though.
Yes. And then finally, true or false, Edmunds was friends with Jimmy Savile.
True.
True.
I mean, friends is a difficult thing to measure, isn't
it? Yeah, true.
I'm gonna say false because I like to imagine a happier, better Edmunds who was kind to me for a brief period in my childhood.
You don't want to get bogged down in the whole yew tree.
No. Can I just stress for the record that Noel was nothing but a perfect gentleman and a tiny professional in all my encounters with him.
That's Adam Brooks, Bristol.
I'm glad we've said that. True.
I'm not sure, however, I do...
What? That can't be... If it's a true or false quiz, your answer can't be, I'm not sure.
Well, only because it basically was an opportunity to read out something that he'd said about Jimmy Savile, which I thought was mildly amusing.
Right, but you can't give us a definitive answer whether it's true or false.
No.
So that is moribund. Strike that question from the record.
Okay.
But give us your info.
Okay. On Jimmy Savile, he said, I never liked him. I found it insulting the way the rest of us would turn up at functions at the BBC dressed in suits, and he'd turn up in a gold tracksuit. I thought he was a shit.
Okay, I would think that infers that they were not friends.
Yeah.
And also, that is a bit like Partridge writing on Edmund.
That's so Partridge-esque as well. Yeah. Presumably that, I mean, I don't know for sure, but presumably that's a quote after the allegations about Savile came out. And his reason for not liking him is he turned up in a tracksuit.
He turns up in a gold tracksuit. I thought he was a shit broadcaster. He had no command of the English language. He couldn't speak properly. He came out with awful expressions like, I was about that when. And I used to wonder why he even had a job.
Wow, and so we're ending that chapter with you doing an impression of Jimmy Savile.
Yes.
Yeah,
great. Next up, quite simply, cows.
My first note on this is it's a genuinely uneventful chapter, and I reckon you could completely get rid of it. I don't think it's that funny, and I kind of had a note here, like, almost... There's numerous references to the word count being upped by Alan, but actually it's just the Gibbons just upping their word count with a fairly disposable chapter that doesn't really go anywhere. What do you think?
They have got the ultimate cover, haven't they, by basically any time they want to up the word count, it's Alan upping the word count.
The good news, though, is I can give you an Alan journey update because he is back on the road for chapter 15.
Great.
This is day 3 of the footsteps of his father walk. On day 3, Alan will cover 18 miles and travel from Diss to Coddenham.
Where we'll have a dinner of cod and ham.
Does anyone want to cover what Alan's mantra is?
I'm happy to do that.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pray silence, for I will now walk in the footsteps of my father.
I think you've nailed the intonation there, Tom. Well done.
Exactly as described.
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of like that Alan sort of projects himself onto cows and assumes what, you know, they kind of heap praise upon him, and that he kind of like, that he's putting this onto the cows. I mean, this is genuinely...
Although without wishing to put words into their cud-filled mouths, yeah, he says.
Yeah, but that is then exactly what he does. I mean, this is the actions of a man that's basically slowly losing his mind. However, the one line that I did like is, these cows don't mince their words, unlike their bodies.
He's losing his mind. By this point, he's what, maybe 3 days into the walk?
He's 3 days in.
Yeah. And he says, while both I and my publisher are wary of my overstating things, I mean, yeah, the publisher clearly has had a word.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you don't believe me, ask the animals. What I like is the full quote of what he imagines the cows are saying. You're a good man, Alan, with a good heart and a good soul. You're also smarter than average and can often guess the end of thrillers before they happen. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep walking in the footsteps of your father. And if the naysayers try to belittle or undermine you, they can go fuck themselves.
And then finally on to a few words then on Norfolk, which is chapter 16. Tom, is there an update to give us on the walk?
So at the end of day three, he's covered 38 miles. So I like the fact he's lost his mind after 38 miles. Chapter 16, that takes us into day four. In day four, Alan will cover 17 miles, travelling from Coddenham to Manningtree. It's probably also worth pointing out that at this point, based on information we are given in the book, day four is a Tuesday. So he started his walk on Saturday and we are now on Tuesday.
Okie doke. So now we have a few words on Norfolk. I mean, as an overarching comment, again, I would say that this, along with the previous chapter, I didn't think was hugely funny. And I think this one, there was an opportunity for it to be funny. So you could talk about, Delia Smith or all the people that have come from Norwich, and there could be something in there. But actually, as you kind of go through it, there's not a huge amount that really happens in it. And I don't think they really harness the opportunity to either really praise Norfolk or really kind of tear it a new one.
Yeah, I think that's quite a good point, actually. Yeah. It's like the comedy potential is a bit unfulfilled.
It's definitely there. What you get is a fairly pedestrian review of Norfolk. It just kind of treads a bit of a middle ground.
Are you saying like a pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre?
Mm-hmm. God, that's good.
I think, and you are almost dead against it as well.
I think, interestingly, when we get to chapter 18, he's talking a bit about kind of Norfolk versus other counties. So I think they nail it a bit more. Yeah, on the comedy angle in
yeah,
that
yeah.
chapter.
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like the whole thing about the Norfolk Philharmonic, as an example, like that is broadly just a functional description.
It's
of
just
it.
A fact.
It's just them.
You
talking.
Call a Philharmonic a Phil.
Yeah. It just isn't that funny. Again, later we hear him talking about, you know, the National Trust, and that's something that he's, you know, has a long-standing relationship with and has made funny jokes about before, but it's just a fairly functional overview. And even when we hear from Roger Taylor, which feels like it could be a good opportunity to, you know, draw some humour from it, I just didn't find it all that funny, to be honest with you.
One gag that I do like is when he talks about how in Norwich, people in Norfolk like to do things their own way, and we steadfastly say no to the homogenisation of our high streets. Mm-hmm. Indeed, we have a very successful campaign group that fights tooth and nail, and plenty of other parts beside, to keep Norwich more or less free from faceless multinational brands. For those interested in getting involved, meetings take place every Friday morning in the Starbucks on St Stephen Street.
Yeah, that is a lovely great. Little gag.
Yeah. But go on. Then there you go.
There's a nice Alan Yes Coogan no as well. He says the only writhing bodies you'll find in Norwich are in the backstreet men's clubs that continue to blight parts of the city centre. Thanks in full to a Labour-run council.
do you think to that point around the Starbucks thing, which is genuinely funny, but it's kind of almost that's the whole build-up to the joke essentially.
Oh, I mean, you can see that coming a mile off. Yeah.
Still funny though.
Should we go through the Norfolk big hitters that Alan names?
Yes.
Yeah. So obviously we've just mentioned Roger Taylor. Brittany Prototype Kathy Dennis.
Hearsay rocker Mylene Klass.
Oh, can I just enjoying Hearsay rocker?
Inspired that. That's great.
And possibly the most surprising of the bunch, Gorleston-born Hannah Spirit, former S Club 7 singer and someone I'm proud to call a friend.
Yeah, that is a great little bombshell, isn't it?
Didn't expect that, but fun fact of you all, there was also a former S Club 7 singer who I was proud to call a friend.
Really? Did she feel the same way?
John Lee?
Oh, I should have known it had been her.
Oh, it's a primary school with John Lee. True fact for you there.
Did you?
Yep.
I'm shocked.
Have you said that before though? Because I'm confident we covered who we went to school with that was famous.
I think we said most famous person from our
hometown.
I would say he these days is probably eclipsed by some other people.
Anyone else have any big names that went to their school?
Well, I mean, I think we from our no,
not while I was there. Oh, but some producer, the manager of the Rolling Stones, Andrew Luke Oldham, went to my school.
Producer Jed seems to be keen to chip in here. Go on, Jed.
I went to an old boys' school, secondary school, and you know you get those big long pictures. What I don't know what they call, but
right,
those
Jed,
big
last words, school last pictures. Photos. Skip to the point.
Catherine Tate went to an old boys' school. She was the only girl there many years before me. But Catherine Tate, very odd.
Thanks, Jed.
Thanks, Jed. And I should probably just say,
back in your box, Jed.
As I think we all know, James Corden did go to my school, but he has now become vaguely more successful than me.
I think there's some nice tidbits in this. I agree that on the whole, it's not a necessary addition to the Nomad canon. But I like that he talks about their sort of modern dance roster, tap, modern, jazz, and disco. I mean, the most modern of those is still probably from the 70s. He puts down as a mark of a success in classical music would be that one of the pieces has been used on an aftershave advert, much like his approval of Blackbird's music in Mid Morning Matters, where he said it's so good it could be on an advert.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously the stock.
He genuinely has really high respect for advertising, doesn't he?
Yep. Mentioning that a town civic center is a great place to go if you prefer your performances louder and slower.
There's
a bit of a reference to the Boxley Wheatsheaf, which obviously comes up in Alpha Papa.
Always good
Matters.
To see a mention for the Boxley Wheatsheaf
and Will o' the Wisp, the popular folk combo that are in session on Pat Fowler's show.
WOTW.
Forget everything you think you know about folk music and get your backside down there.
And they're funny, real groin wreckers.
There is a kind of an overfamiliar, like that is a term that they've used before, basically. And,
But do get there before Phil gets too drunk, as his tipsier lyrics can sometimes cross a line, especially towards women.
Yeah, exactly.
I think not long after that, Alan references the fact that he had last night's dinner was of cod and ham. Has anyone ever had a cod and ham based dinner?
I mean, it sounds a bit awful. Yes, really. Well, I've put bacon lardons in a fish pie before.
I mean, that
works.
That's acceptable.
Yep.
But I think what does it transpire to be in the book? Is it basically battered sausage and like a?
So it's battered cod and a battered sausage.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, would probably work.
Sounds good.
I mean, anything battered, just eat it.
He'd get battered.
He's also quite impressed with the shop that he goes to, saying that it has a window that's used to let in light rather than merely house posters for providers of cheap foreign calls. And that made me think, a bit of a tangent here, but I actually think Alan could potentially make a semi-decent observational stand-up comedian. And I thought, could, in a very meta way, stand-up be the next format that Alan attempts? Or some kind of documentary where he, you know, tries his hand in little comedy clubs, thinking that his brand of humour is very much on the mark and up to date.
But he at no point is trying to do observational comedy. Like, everything that he does is never an attempt to be overtly funny. Think about how many jokes Alan Partridge actually makes.
Yeah, not many.
Like, almost none. None of what he says is actually a joke.
So I guess for that kind of concept to work, you'd have to really survive what the character's all about.
I just think that would be a masterwork on behalf of the people behind Partridge, if basically what you're seeing is stand-up comedy, but none of the jokes he's doing are funny, but the way that he's delivering it, or what he's come up with, that's what's funny. That would be amazing.
You could do quite a good kind of spin-off. It's sort of thing that they used to do, sort of thing on like the Culture Show all the time, where they'd get, like, I mean, I worked on a thing where they would get like a musician to try their hand at stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing where you could build that conceit where Alan's got egged on by people like his sidekick Simon to be like, oh, Alan, you're really funny, you should try out stand-up, and then it all falls flat on its face. That's kind of the way that could transpire.
Or some kind of version of like the Secret Millionaire Show, but for some reason he is the person who's trying to, you know, imparting his wisdom or something.
But remember, we know this will never happen because, as the Gibbons have said, if fans can think of it, we won't do it.
Yeah, in fact, we're probably ruining a lot of future by saying it now.
You could have Duncan Thicket be the compere in the
club.
Don't run away.
Have
you ever noticed?
So he's in the shop now, keen to buy a can of Lilt. We know that Alan is obviously
a big
fan of meat-free Lilt. So he starts caressing the sandwiches because his dad presumably would have touched them many years ago. So he's just essentially fondling the stock that he's not going to buy, at which point a man in his 30s comes out and says, can I help you? And Alan basically wonders if this man remembers his father, not realizing that obviously he basically wouldn't have been born or would have been very, very young. Yeah. At which point, an older gentleman comes out with a bat, and asks Alan, if he's been robbing the sandwiches.
He wants to know if he's the C word who keeps robbing the sandwiches and why.
The way he writes, when dad in inverted commas emerges as well.
Yeah.
And then that ends with, I jog off down Norwich Road. And I thought, does he jog off or is he literally running for his life at that point?
Yeah. That brings us to the end of the chapter. Any more?
Nothing from me.
Just one minor detail, which I quite enjoyed in that that last chapter, where Alan writes, I quickly open my Ruckie, searching for something and then find it, brackets, takes about 45 minutes.
Lovely. And what a good place to stop it. So that's the end of this episode.
Stop it now.
I want you to stop. Next week, we're going to be making plans for Lionel and crossing the county borders as Nick passes the baton to Tom Dark. If you want to get in touch with us in the meantime, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, @thepartridgepod on Twitter, @monkeytennispod on Instagram, and the Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017. Thanks so much for listening. Please do rate and subscribe on iTunes if you can, or wherever you get your pods, and until next time, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
Don't run away.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called The Footsteps of My Father Walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey tennis?
With his stupid Ewok head. Blubber on him, Knowlesy. Love you, Aim.
Monkey tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey tennis?
Motherfucker.
Gary Wilmot. Okay. Sue Cook. Okay. Dale Winton. Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.